You're listening to Department Structures and Policy and Procedures Show and Tell, moderated by Jessica DuPont with Health New England and Luce Loyer with IvMed. This session was presented in February 2017 at the Risk Adjustment Value Visit.
So we sent out a call prior to this value visit inviting all of our health plans to submit templates or org charts or policies and procedures, lots and lots of tools. It's all the things that you use to make risk adjustment happen from an operational perspective. And special thanks to Jess DuPont because she's the one who put together the template, the question that kind of framed up, you know, what are we asking for? What are the elements that are going to be helpful to the group? And we got a lot of responses. Nicole, do you remember offhand? We got like 11 or we got a lot. It's okay. There's a lot of surveys. Nicole helps with all of our surveys. She's like, oh my God, which one are you talking about? So it was a lot. I think it was almost a dozen responses. So we will, before the end of the session, I'll show you where you can go pull these things down electronically. But we did print, I think, everything that made it by the print deadlines. There's quite a few of them in your packet already. So this discussion really is to dive into some of the elements that Amber just spoke about. You know, how is it that people organize this and make it happen? And so we invited AvMed to come and share in a little bit more detail their efforts around, because you guys just like reorged your risk adjustment department fairly recently. And so talking through, you know, why did they reorganize it and kind of what was the thought behind it and those elements. And then I know Jess has already previewed a lot of what people have sent in. And so, you know, highlighting takeaways. And so just open discussion. We are recording this one for a podcast, so I know it's a bummer when I throw the mic around at you, but so this one I really do want to capture on a podcast, so I'm going to be running around with two microphones.
I'm going to go?
Okay.
Why, Sarah? Mm-hmm. I'm not going to tell you how many people we have. I'm going to start by sharing with you a little bit of history about how, you know, we built that department. Over 10 years ago, when we started, you know, risk adjustment, as we were looking at our staffing, you know, we use a module that identifies suspect for us, and we review the medical record, and it was all good. However, 2 years later, the senior management invited a consulting firm. In fact, it was Deloitte. And the message they got across to senior management was, you don't know what you don't know. Being that the suspect identification module we were using only considered claims that were received. And the point to AvMed was, if you have a physician who does a great job at documenting all the conditions, but they have a bad coder, you will never see some of those conditions on the claim. So you don't know what you don't know. The point is to try attempt to reach out to everyone. And that's when the concept of 100% audit was developed. 100% audit, it doesn't mean that we look at every single record, but we attempt to touch at least once any member that saw a physician. And we can do that up to now because we have about 21,000 Medicare members. However, as we plan to grow, that's not scalable. And that's what we are working on right now. And the reason we say touch them at least once, we had to understand the reality, you know, of the community. When some of the Medicare members go to the specialist, not all of them will report back to the PCP. So there are certain specialties that they are very rich, like oncology, cardiology, but we needed to get to them because they don't always have the information with PCP. So the point is trying to get all the PCPs and some specialty at this point. And that's how we touch them 100%. In addition to this concept, our CEO had a clever idea. When it was presented to us, I was a little annoyed. I said, how am I going to do that? But later on, I could better appreciate his vision because it is more in line with ACA. Came to us and said, what do you need to make this happen? What exactly? As you know, for Medicare, if you're talking about payment year 2016, you're reviewing medical record for data service 2015, but you have until January 31st, 2017 to report it. And they said to us, you know something? When you're talking about payment here 2016, what about you finish all the review by April 2017 for payment year 2016, data service 2016, payment year 2017. You need to finish your 2017 payment year review before the end, pretty much before the end of the year, because you have all the record. And we were like, what's going on? Now, you're talking about payment year 2017. By April, you want me to be done with medical record review and of everything in 2016? And the idea behind that was the bid process. Because the idea was we have to look back 2 years to build all those elements into our bid process. We want more recent, more current data. So therefore, by the time May comes, we finalize our bid, we will have, when we finalize the bid for 2018, we will have 2017 final result already. And for that reason, we had to commit to be done at least 95% with our work. Because although we have been pushing those providers, some of them will send it to you, send you the information at the last minute, and some are non-power provider. So we have the remaining 5-7%. They will send it to you in September or so. But the idea was you need to finish it early. And then when ACA came along, we're like, oh, it's the same timeline. So it was not impossible, but they really had a vision. For that reason, they say, okay, we're going to give you the people. Therefore, we have a very robust department. And recently, we only did Medicare. The department used to be called Medicare Revenue Cycle Management. However, another department took care of ACA risk adjustment. Back in the fourth quarter, we were told that we will have to assume ACA also. We pretty much understand what was going on with ACA, but not familiar with the submission and everything else. So that was that was incorporated in our department. So now our department is called Government Program Reimbursement. So we assume risk adjustment for ACA and also Medicare. To assist us, we really have a department of 32 employees, and including myself. We have two technical analysts, and they are technical and data analysts, making sure the follow-up push, if there is a problem. You know, they are not IT people, but they are very much, they have some IT inclination. And also, they are analysts, and they review our data for us. We have two of those. We also have our manager. The manager, and I will tell you the beauty, maybe out South Florida. My manager, who has like a master in statistics, is a foreign grad doctor from India. And so he has the technical and the clinical background. He manages the area. So he manages both the retrieval and the review. And going back to retrieval, what I failed to mention to you, because of RADV, years ago, we agree that we will not, unless a provider wanted us to do the review on the field, on site, we will bring all those records in-house. By the time we get to RADV, we will have most of the records in-house. That's number one. And number two, there was a quality control element in it, because when they go to the field, they finish a review, how do you make sure it was accurate? So that's why we started to send them all in-house. As a result, we have 9 administrative reviewers. And these individuals are dispatched to the field, and they're calling provider with 5 or less records. We call them, we ask them to fax the record to us. But the larger size provider, larger panel, we send a clinical reviewer, sometimes 2 or 3, depending on the relationship we have with them, and also the number of members that they have. And the good thing about some of those providers that have EMR, we have 4 of them. They allow us remote access from our desk, so we can just download our member information and bring it in-house for the nurse to review. The nurses, like I say, unless they are asked to go to the field, they really review in-house. We have, when I say nurse, I talk about nurse coders. The requirement I've made for the review team, they have to be clinicians. We don't have coders only. We have nurses, RN, and we have three of them are certified coders. The rest, we send them to training to become encoders. They have not taken the exam, but definitely train on coding skills, and they get, you know, to go to class every year also, so we can refresh, like, particularly with ICD-10. The company did, like, a very, you know, there was a big initiative for the claims department and also our area to be trained on ICD-10. Because we now have ACA, we have 9 nurses on the Medicare side and 3 on ACA. They are cost-trained. However, one complaint they had was because the model is slightly different, we're looking at slightly different charts, we have to wear different hats and it can be confusing. So that's why, although they are cost-trained, we have dedicated people working these charts. And in addition, for HEDIS, because we have such a large collection department, they had some issues with the vendor retrieving the charts. So what they do every year, they hire temp administrative reviewer, and we manage those for them. And they hire them, you know, from January to May, and we just supervise. But they are not our employee. They don't hit our cost center. We just manage the process for them. In addition to retrospective, what we do in terms of prospective work for the department, for AVMED, we have in-home assessment. And the in-home assessment is performed by Optum for the Medicare line of business. And we also have some HRA. For the HRA, we focus more on aligned providers and the one that have resharing type of agreement with us, and basically tell them, you know, you will lose also if we lose. So basically, we encourage them. We send them, you know, an HRA form, and once a year, and network does follow up with them to make sure that they are calling our members to have a comprehensive evaluation every year. We're not always successful. So what happened by September, we look at the population that was supposed to be subject to an HRA, the one that didn't make it, we switch them to the in-home assessment, making sure the one with high risk, we can see that they have dropped HCCs. We make sure that they get that in-home assessment. Now, we also talking about some other proactive work with Optum, but it's not finalized yet. On the ACA side, we have a contract with them, and they pretty much lead the proactive, like, type of work. They have a member outreach. They have about 3 tracks on it. They have a member outreach program where they identify members, ACA members that need to be contacted, and they review it with us, and we give our approval. And they basically educate those members about the need to go to the doctor, not to wait when you are sick, but you need to be evaluated, etc. And when they call them, if the member allows them to do so, they will assist them in making an appointment at the doctor's office. And once they make that appointment at the doctor's office, they later on contact that office to say, once you finish, you complete, you know, your evaluation, we want the chart back. And they have a second, you know, path, which is called PATH, the provider assessment form. And in South Florida, they have some large practices. They have a very close relationship with, and they have representatives going to them, and they basically reach out to them, go to the office and say, you have so many of members, because some of them, they have over 100 of our members, and that is the key. When you have the one with 1 or 2 members, you cannot control their behavior, but when they start getting that level of membership, you pretty much can influence them, and they will go to those providers and ask those providers to complete, give them a listing of member at risk, ACA member, that they want to call into the office and send that information back to them. So we started this program last year. So this year we're going to have an earlier start. So I'm assuming with our ACA population, that is about 70,000 between IF, like individual and small group, we will do more. We started in August this year. But the next week, I have the kickoff for the member outreach with them. And in May, they're going to start the PATH program for the provider assessment form. Because we told them, we don't want you to start too early. Let's give the claims enough time to come in. Because if we don't see it, then you reach out to those people. So they have, you know, they have a target of about 7,000. So at this point, I don't know how many they're going to do. But basically, they say that if they end up doing more, it's going to be okay. That is within the parameter of, you know, the agreement they have with us. So we'll see at this point. And the third track is really the retrospective part. What was interesting last year, and I told you that we assume responsibility for ACA this year, but last year when the director of this department left and we got our weekly projection and we're like, oh my gosh, we're in trouble. We have a big payable. Something has to be done. And at that time, they asked us to be involved. So we did not assume responsibility for the whole process. But last year, what happened, we had to stop some of the Medicare work we were doing, and we did a lot of retrospective review for the ACA population. What was interesting is that Optum came up with, like, the top, you know, 3,000 charts to look at. And we came up with about 3,000 more. We say we definitely need to look at those because our selection was based on historical data. And this is what we do for Medicare also. Like, we know some practices, some specialties are usually rich. And we also know some of our providers would do a great job at documenting, but we don't get it on the claim. So we get a lot of value by retrieving those records. So that's when we came up with, you know, about half of it. And guess what? At the end of the day, we yielded an almost equal amount of HCC on both groups. So this year, when they came up with the selection for retrieving the record and doing some of the review for us, we say, okay, you came up with about 16,000, but in fact, we have 24 more thousand we want to look at. And we are in the process of collecting. They are also helping us to minimize provider abrasion. If they already were scheduled to go someplace, we give them our listing and they're giving us back those charts. And although at the end, we're going to get all the charts. That is the requirement. And what we do, it's like at AvMed, we know the provider does technically a good job, but we will get a sample and review ourselves to see if we have the same result at this point. So technically for ACA, we have the prospective work being done and the retrospective being done by Optum and us. But on the Medicare side, it's basically handled by us. The retrospective and prospective, as I say, retrospective, we feel comfortable. The prospective is really the HRA and the in-home assessment. However, despite everything we do, I will tell you, retrospective brings a lot to us, but we don't think that's the way to go. The way is to have it documented at the first place and submitted to us. And the thing that we're still realizing, despite all our efforts, we still have issue with documentation. And this is the next step. What we will have to do is get a little bit more involved in provider education. Because our network folks, they go to the field and present some of those stats to the provider, but we don't have an active presence in those interactions. And we feel like it's major. Because over the past 3-4 years, when we're looking at job HCC, and when we say job HCC, it is job chronic HCC, not in acute situation. When we price them, we're talking about over 15 million. We're losing every year. People are not documenting. And as we all know, CMS believe in miracles. Suddenly you're ill, next year you're sick, so you go back and forth. So that is the major problem. This is the major issue we have now, is really engaging our provider to properly document and also send the information. Now, we have, as I mentioned, we have some ally providers, and what we do is really engaging them in a resharing contract, and that helps a little bit. But still, it's really, they don't want a lot for what they're doing, so I know that we're negotiating with them, but the key is really reaching out to those providers with a lot of members, making sure that they understand the behavior we want them to adopt. And we don't have a lot of time, so I think I'm going to stop babbling. And if you have any question, I can answer, or I will turn it to Jessica, and later on, if you have any other question, I will answer. Oh.
Yeah, I have a question about the risk-sharing contracts with the providers. Is that all providers sign that now, or is that just select few? And can you have just a few more details about how that works?
Well, although I'm not from the network department, I will tell you it is like we are targeting some provider with a very large, large panel, like a lot of members. And they have also expressed the desire to work more closely with us. We had some contract with them in 2016, and it was based on incentive for quality and also cost. However, in 2017, what they are doing now at renewal is really put them at full risk. So they will go down if, you know, you can get money and we can take money back from you. But this one is the more complicated proposal, and I know that the network folks are struggling with it, but I know that in March, one of the large practices that we have, I think by March we're going to sign it. So it is really a slow evolving process because they don't quite understand it. And I will just share with you why it is important. I remember some of our executive, for example, my boss, Winston, went to his PCP and he's like, do I need to document every year? It's somewhere in the record. So it's like, it's convenient for them, but they don't know it's necessary to document and redocument those chronic conditions each time you see, you know, a member. But I think it is a slow process, but I think we're getting there. And we need to continue to educate them also.
I think that's a great topic, too. I added it to Kristen's list because I think that might be a forum topic or something that we can dive into about what kind of language are you working on in your organizations? What have you been able to get your contracting department to agree to? Because I think that's going to be the hurdle, right? They already have a hard enough time getting providers to sign on renewal and negotiate rates. And so trying to jam another thing in there to get the providers to agree to, there's going to be some hesitancy, but I think that there is a path forward if we sort of put our heads together and figure out. Well, thank you very much, Luz. That was fantastic.
And you know, one thing I failed to indicate, you know, one key role that we also have in the department, and she's an RN with a certified coder. She's our QA coordinator. And we do regular audit, and this is a person leading the process of RADV or IVA for us. Thank you.
Great. So we only have about 20 minutes, and I want to keep us on time because I know we have a great case study coming up. So I think our 20 minutes is better served as sort of an initial conversation, but then I think what I heard is we've got some takeaways, that this is a topic that maybe we can do some more work on. We can resurvey the group because there's clearly an appetite to sort of understand how people are structuring, what's the optimal structure. What are the skills that you need to have in place? You know, that was another conversation I had over breakfast. Sometimes we don't think about it like that, right? We sort of think about functions, but maybe not necessarily lining up the skills that we need in order to execute those functions. So I'll just talk 2 seconds about sort of Health New England, and for the plans that are still here in the room, maybe we can just quickly, like 1 minute each, give, you know, your name, your plan, and where you sit in the reporting structure. I know some people sent in the forms. If you didn't, please still do fill out the template and update it, because I think they're really useful conversation starters. So my name is Jess DuPont. I'm from Health New England. Like you may have heard before, my history is with government programs, but about 2 years ago, I took over the most recent iteration of our risk adjustment strategy at Health New England. So we've had several starts and stops since we went live with Medicare Advantage back in 2008. Like many of you, our organization struggled with, where does this sit? Who is the appropriate group to sort of own risk adjustment? So initially it was clinical. This is clinical. This is records. This is, we need a doctor overseeing this. And we tried, and it didn't work. they gave it their best effort, but I think, unfortunately, having a doctor sort of at the helm of the program, he was just too in the weeds. He was too in the weeds of the clinical. And so we had some other challenges with actually finding certified coders, keeping certified coders. Again, lots of sort of starts and stops. We tried to create our own in-house nurse practitioner program and then realized we had no business trying to run that ourselves and hire and staff for a nurse practitioner program. So ultimately, we sunsetted that out. So we tried in our informatics, we tried under our CMO, we tried having one poor person report to both the CFO and the CMO, which, I mean, that's just setting someone up for failure, having two VPs. And so ultimately, several years ago, the decision was made, okay, stop with the two reporting structure, put it squarely into the CFO. This is a financial revenue function, have ties and relationship with clinical, but it needs to come sort of from a very financial focus. So that's where risk adjustment sits at Health New England right now. I'm temporarily under our government programs and operations because we are without a CFO, but my understanding is the plan will be to roll back under the CFO. So if we could go, do we have the microphones? So who wants to go first? Just again, your organization and at a high level where risk adjustment sits.
So I'm with Neighborhood Health Plan of Rhode Island, and we're just actually beginning our experience with Medicare. We have had the commercial product for a couple of years. The risk adjustment function sits under the CFO. We have a staff of two. And however, we do have accountable entities. There's an organization that's over in our under our chief medical officer. So we try to coordinate with them in order to have the connection with the provider community. And from a data perspective, the filings of our RAPs and our Edge server and those types of things roll up under our IS department.
Great, thank you.
In addition to the people maybe who are in your department, like you have two folks maybe, mm-hmm. Who are the other resources in the organization that you pull in? Because you may be using additional resources that aren't in your department mm-hmm. that would be helpful to kind of know where the connections are.
Sure. Well, a couple of other areas that we call into that we rely upon. We have a evaluation and improvement department that handles our HEDIS function. And so we rely on those, the folks in that department. They have a group of nurses that help us with our chart pulls and with our analytics on our medical records, and then we also rely upon our compliance department to help us with understanding the regulatory environment that we're dealing with. And I think that's about it.
Okay, my name is Rick Eliksanch. I'm with SumaCare. We started risk adjustment back in the early days when the PIP DCG model was actually being phased out. And we were under IT, and we were doing the work. There was a lot of issues with it. I got brought in to kind of take a look at it, and so I straightened it out, and I started reporting over to the director of Medicare, who said, you know, this function really should be under me, but I don't know enough about it. And so she basically made me her manager at the time. And we started doing risk adjustment full-time. We developed our internal processes from scratch. We went out and did chart reviews, and we would share resources between, you know, Medicare then and health service management, who had clinical nurses that were actually going out and reviewing the charts for us. When I brought up the fact that I thought it should be actual coders, you know, if looks could kill, I wouldn't be here today. So it was like we didn't go that route for a long time. And finally, we took our coders, or we took our nurses, and got them trained in HCC coding. So we've come a long way in that respect. But they were still doing HEDIS quality review measures. And even though when the program was set up, they were supposed to be full-time HCC, it never worked that way. And then when we got a new director of Medicare, who then became our vice president of Medicare, said, you know, I want to focus in on Medicare sales. So we got flipped out of there, and nobody really wanted us, so they put us under finance. Yeah, because it was dollars, and the finance CFO at the time said, you know what? Good. I could take these dollars and use them the way I want. There was a fight between him and HSM, and basically when it would come to that, we would lose our health service management department every time. But we took it. We developed health risk assessments that we would do in the provider offices, and then we actually have done, moved it into the home. So we are progressing there. But our department is very splintered because even though we were formed for risk adjustment, the people that work for me were all ex-IT, so we were doing a lot of our own development. We started becoming IT5 for our finance department and doing everything else for them. So we picked up Part D reconciliation to help them out. We helped our eligibility department to do carry at risk, the premium withholds. We got into plan to plan. So I have, over the years, explained to my management that we are watering down the risk adjustment department, and we are called reconciliation because that was the name our CFO came up with, which gives a bad connotation to the whole company because anytime anything needs reconciled, my department gets volunteered. Well, so we're looking at restructuring that. I've suggested new names. I've also wanted to bring it in. And like I said, those review nurses that got trained are now reporting to me, but they only report to me, starting in May because they're doing HEDIS, and quality till that time. So once again, I guess we're taking baby steps, but we're trying to get there. I keep emphasizing that we need to have a robust, full department, but it hasn't worked that way. And I know my Part C analyst, who is phenomenal in risk adjustment, and we've worked together for the last 10 years on it. He's also supporting our IT function on EDPS because they don't have the knowledge or training. So we're, once again, crossing over and further watering down our area. So the type of reports and dashboards that you guys are seeing from some of the vendors, we've tried to do that ourselves. But once again, it's when I'm off coding and I have another guy who does some SQL for me, and then we use Access front ends to develop a lot of tools. So, but we do chart our final reconciliation in mid-year, and each year we've pushed it up. And so our CFO is happy because we're bringing in the money, but I really emphasize risk mitigation and being prepared for RADVs, which always seems to take second tier in finance. So I'm not sure finance should be the area. So,
well, I mean, I think you bring up a good point, right? And it's, again, a conversation that has come up in a few different forums is this idea of the ratio of dedicated staff to membership, and then how do you calculate an ROI? How do you build that case to your senior leadership? Obviously, if we all had unlimited budgets, we would all love to have like dozens of people to help us do all of these incredible initiatives that we come up with, and that's just not realistic. So, what I've spent a lot of time doing since I took over the risk adjustment department is saying, it's not going to happen overnight, but I know that, what I started with when I first took over was just a team with one business analyst and three coders. And I knew that that wasn't enough. I knew that we needed to have different functions and different abilities to bring in the IT piece, bring in the auditing piece. But it's the long game, not the short game, right? We keep saying that that's what risk adjustment is all about, is you have to build the case over time. So I think that's going to be another takeaway when we do the follow-up survey, is just trying to get a sense of size, right? Like the size of the membership you're managing to the dedicated or split resources that you have in your organization, to see if we can try and make a correlation between those two things to, again, give us some ammunition to go back to our executive leadership and say, across the alliance, we're seeing that it's really a 4-to-1, a 5-to-1 ratio in terms of dedicated resources to, every several hundred members. Who wants to go next? Just quickly, I know we're running out of time. We only have about 8 minutes. Does anybody else want to just very briefly talk about? Oh, another one? Go for it.
So I'll try to keep it like succinct. So I think that you're right that you don't really know where it's going to fall under. And I don't think there's a right answer as far as like from plan to plan. It's really going to matter on who are those people in those positions. We have April Vogelzang, which if you don't know her, you should get to know her. She's a trauma nurse by trade, but she has a very good business mind and very data-driven. So she is my VP. She recently became the VP of medical management. So we are now under the division of medical management. We're integrated. She actually is on both sides. So she has hospital staff and health plan staff reporting up through her. She has a dyad partner who is our CMO. We used to report to the CMO. We've reported to finance. We've reported to all these different places, but we've landed with April. Wherever April goes is where risk adjustment revenue management has stayed since 2000 and I would say 10, 11. We started out in compliance, one person. She was a certified coder, and they said, you know, here, do this. Come to find out it's millions of dollars of here, do this. When I joined the health plan from the physician side in 11, there were four of us, a couple financial analysts and, you know, April, and then we were starting an HRA program, all of that. I provided our flow for everyone. We've got three leaders. We've got a clinical team that is our nurse practitioners and our case managers. And then we have a coding team, which is coding consultants who are out, provider education, all of that good stuff. And then coding analysts that are heads down coders. The reason why we have case management in our department is because April is our VP and we're a pilot department. So anytime they come up with something new and fresh, hey, try this out, see if it works. So we tried out a very high risk case management just for risk adjusted members. And pilot year was very successful. So they said, hey, you can make it a real program, hire another nurse. So they've stayed with us. Having April in medical management helps to make sure that tie is supported. So really, I wouldn't have your takeaway as, oh my gosh, we're under this right. department. I don't know if we should be here. And then we work with IT very closely. Our manager of account data is in our back pocket. I mean, we're working, Joretta works with her, I think, more than some of the people in our actual risk adjustment department. So
yeah, no, I agree. I think it depends on the organization, but you've hit a very key point, right? Like it goes back to that. It's not just about the job, it's about having the right people. And so oftentimes we do see that once you find the right person that can sort of wrap their brains around exactly what risk adjustment means and how important it is to the organization, sort of regardless if it's a finance position, a medical position, what's more critical is sort of the understanding and the ability to sort of tentacle out, like this is how risk adjustment links into finance, links into clinical, and to sort of collaborate. So that's a great point. And I would love to hear more about that program. I think that would be a great topic for a call to sort of say, you know, because again, there's no right answers, but, you know, piloting some of these innovative ideas of, you know, we took our care managers and we really focused on this population to see if we could move the needle. Because that's really what it's about, right? Is just what can we do to move the needle even that little bit to get the score, to get the revenue, that type of thing. So I asked Kristen to sort of pull up the HPA site. Everybody that's in the room is probably familiar, but I just wanted to reiterate because I use this a lot. I use the resource library and the knowledge center to pull job descriptions and to pull org charts. And I think that's a takeaway that we can all go back to our organization. Sometimes we don't think to do it. Sometimes we think, oh, like this is only really applicable to me, or this is only applicable to my department, and this wouldn't be valuable to anybody else. And I am here to tell you that is 1,000% not true. I would love to see all of the tools that you're using. I put a couple of tools that I have developed in my department. They're not fancy. They're like basic Excel spreadsheet. You know, it was the first thing I tried to get my arms around when I took over the department is, how do we track volume? Like, this is like a very basic thing. Like, I need to know how many reviews my coders are doing, and I need to know the average number of reviews they need to do every day over the cycle of the project in order to hit our goals. And so I just created an Excel workbook. I loaded it up there. Feel free, if it doesn't work for you, if you have something more sophisticated, I would love to see it. But I really think there's an opportunity for us to sort of learn from each other, because sometimes it's very easy to over-engineer this, right? Sometimes it's very easy to get so into the numbers and the weeds and the tools and the dashboards that it's just as easy to have, as I do, a paper thermometer on my chart that my coders get to come and color in when they've completed 100 charts. And it sounds so silly and childish, but the joy that they get, like coloring in a paper thermometer and seeing that it says on the border if they do 3,500 chart reviews by the end, it's keeping it simple is all the motivating you need in order to get what you need out of your team. So that's my stump speech on that.
During this portion of the session, Kristen from the Health Plan Alliance provided attendees a demo of how to share a resource on the Health Plan Alliance website and how to access the knowledge library. For more information on how to use these tools, visit the website FAQ page located in the footer of the Health Plan Alliance website.
Thank you. That was perfect. So that's my plug, and that's my plug to please spread the word to any of your friends in your organization that may not use the HPA site or use this resource as much. Please share, because it makes us all better and makes it all easier. We've got enough to do. We don't need to be, like, reinventing the wheel 85 different times. Yes. Oh, hold on. Get him a microphone.
Yeah, you just keyed on something when you said not reinventing the wheel. We're always talking about, you know, here's our best practice, what we found works great. I think we also might want to share those things that we tried that didn't work to save other people time, you know, so.
Absolutely. Well, and it is. It's one of those things to either save them time or, as we were saying, there's a lot of great ideas out there that, you know, may not have worked for Health New England for a variety of reasons due to, you know, the way we're integrated or the way we are geographically that might be like a knock it out of the park idea for another organization. So, you know, I think sometimes there is a hesitation when Kristen comes and calls you and taps you to do a case study. Like, don't ask me. I don't know anything. But know that anything that you share, whether it was a success or a failure, we're all going to learn from it. So please don't hesitate. So thank you very much. We will follow up on this. Thank you.